Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, thank you for joining me today. Back during the height of COVID, I did 20 different live video interviews within a month. And this week, we're going to play one of those interviews with Glenn Lord. Glenn's five-year-old son, Noah, died in 1999. So he has been on his own personal grief journey for over 20 years. Glenn has so much richness and love and compassion in what he shares. I really think you will enjoy this interview. I have to apologize, though. There were some technical problems here and there, which Glenn points out is a great example of our grief journey. And I believe what you will get from this is worth putting up with those technical issues that you get when you do these Zoom type of things. Now, since you will hear me introduce him on our interview, I won't do that now. So let's just get it started. I'm going to just real quickly introduce Glenn, and he was on his way to being a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, climbing the ladder very quickly, doing very well, and then the death of his son Noah way back in 1999 put the brakes on everything, just like it does for all of us when our child dies. And as Glenn was walking this grief journey, he realized that there was a need for genuine and accurate grief information. And so with that, he put his extensive business experience to work, and he founded what is called the Grief Toolbox. And he offers community resources, memorial products, just all kinds of things for people in grief to meet their needs. And he also created a program called Walking Through Grief. And Glenn has very quickly become someone that I consider a friend. And I am very honored to have Glenn in my life. And if you've not met Glenn, you're in for a real treat. And I think you're about to be blessed. So Glenn, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Laura, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoy being here.
Well, why don't you start out by sharing Noah's story with us?
Okay. Well, you know, in 1995, Noah was born, and it really changed my life in ways that I am still coming to understand. He was my firstborn son, and it really changed my whole perspective on the universe. I had kind of, up until then, I had never really thought about where I fit into everything, but having this person who I was responsible for, who I, you know, loved and cared for, it changed me inside. And for 4.5 years, he was a happy, wonderful boy who had periodically had problems with his ears. And so he had ear tubes put in a couple of times. And finally, one of the doctors suggested that he have a tonsillectomy and an adenoidectomy, and that would help everything. And we went back and forth and back and forth and finally decided that it was the right thing to do. And it turned out that that event changed everything, because having that surgery led to a series of errors that ended with Noah dying from complications from his tonsillectomy 3 days after the surgery in June 14th of 1999.
Oh my goodness, you just don't think of that happening. That comes out of nowhere, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And it's not something you think about, although I've come to learn through my involvement with Compassionate Friends and other large parent groups, that there are others who have also had their child die from complications of a tonsillectomy. And sadly, about 1 in 15,000 tonsillectomies end in death. And So it isn't something you think about. But if you're the one in the 15,000, it changes your life forever.
Definitely. Wow. So we're going to be talking about today how grief is a journey. And so you have been on this journey for a good 20 years. That's a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And grief is a journey. And I think that that's something that is, depending on where you're at in the journey, it is very easy to see and almost self-evident if you're further down the road, in the beginning, it can be impossible because you can hardly see the light of the next hour in front of your face. And so it is, but it's how and where you see it depends on where you're at with it. And it's all about, you know, it's not about where you end up. It's about how you get there. And it's allowing yourself to be who you are and experience what you need to experience at the time you need to experience along that journey. And I just want to share what I think is a wonderful quote by my friend, David Kessler. Many people may know him, but he actually has an interesting quote that has to do with grief and journey that I think is very apropos here. He says, what if the journey at the end of life is not a lonely path into eternity, but rather an incredible reunion with those we have loved and lost? And, you know, we're still here. We may not know why, and we may live our entire lives never knowing why, but we are still here, and we have a life, whatever that is. And even if, and you know, wherever you're at with that, even if your part of your journey is struggling to get out of bed today, you know, it's one piece in front of the other. And sometimes it's a windy road and it's a crooked road, but your journey the journey of grief works that way.
Now you said something interesting. You said, but we're still here. And at the beginning, we're really upset about that, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's very, very common. I think maybe upset is the wrong word, at least from my perspective. I think it's more ambiguous. It's kind of like, I don't care that I'm here. I mean, I'm
right.
I think it's very common in grief. You know, I can remember more than one night going to bed where my prayer was, you know, Lord, take me tonight so I don't have to be here tomorrow morning. And I don't think it's unusual for people to feel that kind of feeling of like, why am I here? It doesn't matter. I don't need to be here. And, you know, if you're contemplating actually hurting yourself, please seek help. So don't hear me wrong. If you're feeling suicidal, please reach out and call 911 and seek help. But feeling that sense of ambiguity of life, I think, is a very common reality of parents' grief journeys.
Yeah. Now, Glenn, you have lost more than just your son. You have faced more loss, haven't you?
Yes. You know, my life has been riddled with loss. My first major loss was my grandmother, and that is not something some people may think of. But my grandmother died when I was 20 years old. And, you know, in many ways, my grandmother was my mom. I was raised by her. You know, she was, I was with my parents also, but my grandmother raised me. And, you know, when she died, that was like my mom dying. And then Noah died. And then subsequently, I've had my sister die from metastatic breast cancer, my mother die, and my father die. So at this point, I've had most major losses. You know, I pray I don't get to experience them all. I've had to experience what I've had. But one of the things I've also learned through all of this is, we don't know what tomorrow holds, and we just have to love and accept where we're at, and you know, realize that there's a beauty in this moment if we can allow ourselves to see it.
Yeah, that's hard though, isn't it? How do you do that? How do you find the beauty in the moment on this journey?
Well, again, I want to be careful because I do want to point out to people that, you know, when you're hearing me talk, if you're listening to this, you have to remember my son died in 1999, over 20 years ago. So when I'm talking about these things, this, you know, I'm talking about it from a perspective that has had decades to get here. This is not, I am not speaking, you know, so in the beginning, I think it really is that, you know, being willing to put that one foot in front of the other, whatever that might mean, and recognizing that there is, that your goal in grief is not to make it go away. It's not to get through it. It is to continue to grow yourself and to allow yourself to feel everything you feel. And sometimes that is pain and sometimes that is joy. And sometimes feeling joy can be feel really you with guilt or can make you feel like it's inappropriate or wrong. But honestly, it's accepting where you're at and whatever it is that you're feeling. And if you're feeling upset, feel upset. If you want to cry, cry. If you want to be happy, be happy. And allow yourself to feel what you feel when you feel it. And if you're, you know, if that's causing you trouble, that's okay too. It's okay to not be okay along this journey.
Yeah, when you said accepting where you're at, I think sometimes can we get stuck as parents, especially in those early years of comparing ourselves? Maybe we find out where other parents were or are on this journey, and it causes us to not take our own needed journey, doesn't it?
Yes. I think that's a very, very good observation, Laura. I mean, I think that one of the things that's important to note is no two journeys are the same. No two griefs are the same. And one of the things that I try to explain to people is Noah died, my son died. Noah died, my wife Tanya's son died. We both had the same human being die, but we did not experience the same death. It was very, very different. Who Noah was to Tanya and the effect that he had on her and where she was at any given time was very different than where I was at any given time. And if you can take something like that and see how with two parents who have the same child at the same time and realize they're not in the same place, how the more is it going to be someone who's lost a completely different person with a completely different life path? And we're all along those paths. And I think it's if we can accept others where they're at and allow ourselves to be where we're at, we can all be together in this and just and really both show love for ourselves and show love for others. And that's the biggest thing we can do through this journey.
That's really good to think of that way. I love that. If two people are grieving the same person differently, how much more different is our journey going to be? Someone grieving a totally different loss, a different child, different relationship, different circumstance. Everything is different. So why would we think we're going to grieve the same?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, there's really only one rule in grief. And if you can follow this one rule, everything else is fine. You know, you're not allowed to hurt yourself or others through this grief journey. Other than that, anything you want to do, do it. And it's appropriate and it's right. And, you know, and by hurt other people, I don't mean if someone is shunning you, that you shut them out of your life and they're hurt by that. I mean, if you're actually, you know, physically causing them pain or something of that nature, you're not allowed to. But other than that, you know, you're not, there isn't a right or a wrong. Everything else is right because it's where you're at and it's right for you at that moment in time.
So that means there's no right or wrong time. Now, I didn't have to deal with this because Becca was 29 and she was married, but you certainly had to deal with it. I know so many parents that have had to face things like going through their room, going through their things, taking their room apart. How do you deal with things like that? There's no right or wrong timing for that either, is there?
No, there absolutely is not. I have a good friend whose son died over a decade ago, and his son's room is exactly, even to the placement of the toothbrush in his son's bathroom, the way it was his son died. And that is absolutely correct for him. He and his wife are happy with that decision. They are financially able to have their house be that way. And he's said that it's his opinion, and it may change over time. But his answer of when that room changes, when he and his wife die, that his other children, when they inherit the house, can choose to change it or not. It's not getting changed. In my case, though, we moved and sold our house within 6 months of Noah dying. We had sold our house. We had moved. We were no longer in that house. And that was what was right for us. And neither one is right or wrong. The only time that it potentially causes a challenge is when you have two parents who are at two different places. And that's where you have to recognize that there may need to be some form of compromise. And it isn't that, you know, one parent's right or one parent's wrong, but you also, you know, if you're going to stay together as parents, you also have to recognize that just like everything else in life, there could be compromises here. And, you know, the mother may wish to close up the room. The father may wish to keep it, you know, or vice versa. Or even your other siblings that may have some feelings about it. And as a family, you have to address everybody's needs and kind of work together through that. And there's not a right or wrong, but communication is the key to that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's not even a conscious decision. It's just all of a sudden you find yourself in there doing it.
I think that's very, very right. Very true. I mean, I think a lot of times in early grief, we don't consciously think things through. We just do and allow ourselves to be there. And if we can be compassionate with ourselves and recognizing that we're doing what is right for us at the time, And if we can see that in a loving, kind way and be mindful of what we're doing, then I think we can also, that is the biggest thing we can do to help ourselves along that journey, and recognizing that that journey is going to be what it's going to be. But if we can, love ourselves through it, then it'll be the best journey for us at that time.
Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about how every journey is different and we need to be on our own journey. But it does seem that in a lot of cases, there are some similarities, aren't there?
Well, I think there's a lot of commonalities. I think that's one of the beautiful things, you know, whether it be the bereaved parents of the USA, or whether it be the Compassionate Friends, or whether it be your local grief group, being able to be with others who have experienced this loss, because many of the things we experience, we may not experience them at the same time, and it may not be for the same reason, but we often experience the same things. You may feel an uncomfortableness about a certain time of year. In our case, this is coming up kind of to the, there's kind of a track here. There's Mother's Day, there's Memorial Day, there's Father's Day, and then there's Noah's Death Day. And so all of those, even now that it's 20 years later, there's often times where we are triggered back to those moments 20 plus years ago. And to be able to talk to someone else and say, yeah, for me, it may be October, or it may be, whatever. But to realize that those are common, I think is very important, because it helps you see that. And that's one of the real powers of peer grief support. And if you haven't tried it, I would highly recommend, if you have the opportunity to go to a peer grief support meeting, go 3 or 4 times. And in this world that we're in COVID right now, a lot of groups are meeting virtually. So, take the risk and go to one and give it 3 or 4 times. I think you'll find that it will, in the long run, it'll really help you know that you are okay, and things you may think are not okay.
Mm-hmm. And some parents, not all, but some parents, when they are looking for a local support group, they end up in something that's not specifically for parents. And most of them bow out of that. They just cannot relate. And so I'm just curious what your thoughts are, if at all possible. Is it important to find a peer group that can relate to you as a parent who's lost a child?
Well, I think it's a key word there that requires everybody's personal definition. Who is my peer? And I think that's really important, because for some, it's more than just finding other parents. Maybe your child died due to suicide, and maybe you want to be with other parents whose child died through suicide, or maybe it was through murder, or maybe it was due to substance use, or things of that nature. And you may want to be with a group that is very specific for that kind of piece. That may be who you view as your peer group. So be with your peer group. In other cases, you may view anyone who's had a loss as your peer. And so that is your peer group, and go with it. So I think it's really important to self-define who your peer group is. And it's okay if the group doesn't meet your qualifications for peer, find the right group. And I think in often cases, you're right, bereaved parents are more comfortable with other bereaved parents, because one of the unique realities of a parent loss or sibling loss, and I think there's a commonality in both cases, is that it happens out of what we view as the natural order of things. Now, it's not really the natural order. Children do die. You and I can both speak to that. That is naturally how the world works at times. But it's
loss in the Bible was the loss of a child.
Absolutely. So it is part of the natural order of things. But for some reason, we all have this belief structure that it isn't. And because it isn't, we never think about it at all. I mean, my parents died relatively young. My mom was in her 60s and my dad was in his early 70s. So they were relatively young when they died. But at the same time, I've known, that more than likely there would be a time when they would die. And, it is painful and it hurts. And, my dad's over 3 years since he died. And in that specific case, there are times I long for my dad still today, but it's different in the sense that I think that I had that understanding. Whereas with my son, there was never that understanding. Or with my sister, she was 10 years my junior. In both cases, the understanding was that I would be gone before either one of them.
Yeah. Well, even with a spouse, you know, there's a 50-50 chance that you're going to be the one left behind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So are there markers along the way, Glenn, that show us that we really are healing and getting better and stronger? And you and I know when we talk about healing, we're not talking about this will all be behind you and you'll all be better. We're talking about healing, being able to function again, and even going beyond that, but having an abundant life and a thriving life with meaning and purpose again. So are there markers that you can think of, things, because I know sometimes, especially in those early years, you feel like you're getting nowhere and it's like, this is never going to end. I'm never going to get out of this pit. How am I going to live the rest of my life this way? So what are some of those little things that maybe we can see that it's like, yep, you have gone forward a little bit?
Well, I think there's a bunch of them, but I also want to point out, I think you framed it very, very well in the nature of your question, because I think at the very beginning of grief, we're not worrying about thriving. We're not worrying about finding purpose. We're just trying to survive. We're just trying to, and even that, we're apathetic about our own survival. So it's kind of like almost our instincts kick in, and we're surviving off of instincts. But I think as you start to see those items happening, and it may be the first time that you're able to go out with friends and feel like, hey, that was a good night. I enjoy being there. And have that be something that even if you feel guilty about it afterwards, you did it. Or maybe the next time you go out and it's like, hey, I like that. I want to do that again. And you go do that again. Or perhaps it is something where you're able to sit there and you're able to have a cry and realizing, you know what? That was a positive thing. It's okay that I cried. Not that I'm never going to cry. Not in the moment of crying, you wonder, will I always cry? Am I going to never have these tears stop flowing? But you know, they're going to happen. And yet there is maybe it'll happen for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, but it's an end and there'll be a difference. And when you start to notice those things. Another friend of mine, Alan Peterson, has a statement that I think really describes that well. He says, you know, if you sit out on a porch and you watch grass grow, you're going to think nothing's happening. However, if you don't go mow it periodically, it gets pretty high. And I think that that's part of what happens in our grief journey. If we start to try to look for those things as they're happening in the moment they're happening, they're almost impossible to notice. But if you start to look back and ask yourself, how does this compare to where I was, you know, last month, last year, 2 years ago, and start to see how those differences start and allow yourself to celebrate those pieces, whatever they are. Because the thing is that our connection with our child is based in love. That is really what it is based in. And that love, while they're here, has certain unique realities of all of the physical aspects and things of that nature. And those go away. But the love does not. And for me and for many parents that I know, if you ask them the question, do you love your child more, less, or the same as the day that they died? I've yet to have any parent give me any answer but tell me that they love them more. And that to me, I think, is indicative of the fact that our relationship, if we let it grow, it grows. It is a true living relationship, and that love grows. And it is something that we never lose. They'll be with us in that respect forever.
Mm-hmm. I know we had Dave and I last summer before, kind of blurs together sometimes, but we were at, we were speaking at a conference in Ohio, and Dave had a mom come up to him and say something, it had been something like 10 years or whatever it was, several years down the road. And she said, nothing has changed for me. It's all just as horrible. And, you know, there's been no change, you know, blah, 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 kind of a thing. And Dave was like, but there has been growth, or you wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't be at this conference. You would be home in a ball crying somewhere still. And so I think sometimes it's important to recognize that there is growth. I know for me, one of the really early things that was a something for me that I knew I was starting to pull out of that dark pit that we get sucked into at the beginning was it, your child is your identity. I mean, that's part of who you are. And so when that identity, when that child goes, you have to deal with that. I mean, we're still that parent, but that's all stuff we have to deal with. And I know, like, at the beginning, if I would meet someone new, I'd want to, oh, hi, I'm Laura Deal, and my daughter died. I mean, it was just a part of who I was. And getting to the point where it was like, I didn't feel like, I mean, I never added that, but just that thought was there. And so just getting to the point where that thought wasn't there anymore made me realize that something's happening. I'm starting to come out of this somehow. It's happening.
Yeah, I think that's very astute. And as you were saying that, one of the things that crossed my mind is I have two other sons. And, you know, in the beginning, like you say, when Noah died, I wanted to tell everyone I was a bereaved dad. And now I take note of how often I, depending on the situation, I may not talk about any of my children. I may, and it isn't that I don't love them or care about them, but it's not what's happening at that moment. That's not the relationship I have with these people. And for some people, I want to share with them that I have three children and one is dead. And for other people, I just share with them that I have the two. And it's not that I'm denying my son. It's just for me where that fits. And some people, you know, you have to make your own decisions about where that is. But I think you're right. Noticing those little things are major growth in this journey.
That is part of the journey. I mean, there are so many little things that we deal with. The simple question of how many kids do you have? That's usually part of an introduction, especially for moms. You know, for dads, a lot of it is where do you work? You know, that kind of a thing. For moms, it's how many kids do you have? And that is part of the journey. Some of those little things. For me, one time I said I have four children and it felt so horrible. It was like, I will never say that again. I have five children. And usually when you have five, people don't ask about, oh, they don't ask for details on five. That's too many. But it's like, I would rather tell someone that my oldest one has gone on to be with the Lord. And, but that can be awkward. And especially at the beginning, and you don't want to talk about it with a stranger. And that's all part of the journey. And that can change as we go along, can't it?
It can. And I think it's you learned for you what was right for you. And that's important, is to honor that, because, you know, if whatever is right for each individual, we have to learn and we try. And maybe someone tries on, you know, saying that they have, that they mention all of their children, or maybe they don't. And it isn't what's right or wrong. It's recognizing that and being honest with yourself about what feels right for you. And to your point, it's allowing it to change, because much like everything else in life, we're changing, we're growing. And what may feel very comfortable at one point in time may not feel comfortable at another. And allow yourself that, you know, that space and that compassion with yourself to allow yourself to do what's right for you in that moment, whatever that might be. So absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think sometimes in this journey, the way we figure out what's right for us is by making the wrong decision. You know, like for me, that one simple thing of saying I have four kids, and it was like, that just, okay, that didn't work for me. I'm not doing that again. And so sometimes part of our journey, figuring out what works, and, you know, like we said, it can change later down. I mean, it could be years later and I'll tell someone I do have four children because I'm ready to say that, or I don't want to go there or whatever. But it's just the whole thing about it being a journey. I mean, there's going to be mountains and valleys for the rest of our lives, aren't there?
There will be. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, as you talk about it, I hope people are hearing that grief is part of life, because I think that life has all of these mountains and valleys and journeys. And one of the things that I think we do a disservice of, more so in American culture than maybe in other cultures, but I think sometimes we don't recognize that grief is just a natural part of life. It is something we all experience in different ways. And, to be able to realize that just like anything else in journey, you know, you've been married for, I think, over 25 years, if I'm not incorrect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you and David.
Yeah, over 30.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's been mountains and valleys in those 30 years.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is the nature of, that's the nature of a marriage, or it's the nature of a grief. Or if you look at your other four children, there have been times when things have been really great with them, and other times when they have been that, you know, they really just stressed you and caused you immense problems. And so I think that's there's been mountains and valleys there. So I think like everything is mountains and valleys, and to recognize that and to allow ourselves that that honoring of that, and recognizing that the fact that the grief is part of our lives isn't a wrong thing or a bad thing. It's it is just a normal, natural part of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is. We don't like it.
No, it we don't like it. But you know, I know you are a believer in Christ, and so am I. And I think that there are many things in life that if we were to ask ourselves, is this what we want? The answer would be no. But the fact is we're not given that choice. This world is what this world is, and so we have you know, it doesn't get taken away. It's still part of this world. And, you know, even Christ cried when his best friend died. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just part of our humanness.
And our culture just isn't good at allowing grief. We just aren't. We're not good at weeping with those who weep and just being there. We want to fix people. We want to help them to move on, get over this. And it just doesn't happen that way.
I do think that is it. We want to fix them. And I think if you're listening to this and you're asking yourselves, how can you help your friend? I think the biggest thing anybody can do is be, just be. If you can sit there and not try to fix someone, but allow them to be wherever they're at. If they want to cry that day, let them cry. If they want to go have fun that day, let them have fun. If they want to talk about their child, let them. If they don't, let them. And let it be okay, because I don't think it's a matter of fixing anyone or moving on. It's a matter of being and just being together and being with them through this journey, and not leading them, not following them, but being beside them on it is how you can best help someone.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a question. I'm not sure if I can phrase it in a way that makes sense, but as bereaved parents, as you're on this journey for a while, and you do get to the place you can eventually live again and learn what that looks like for you. A lot of times the grief journey is described in illustrations, such as carrying a backpack of rocks or the old waves. I'm just curious, how would you describe in an illustration? Is there an illustration that you use to describe the grief journey after the death of our child?
Well, I think the one that I commonly use is the ocean waves, because I do think that is the, you know, I think it's very well, and I think I think sometimes we think of oceans as what we're going to see in those 5 minutes where they steadily come in, and if you're at a beach, you know, they might be 1 foot wave and then a 1.5 foot or a 3 footer, but I think it's about thinking about, you know, sometimes there's hardly any waves at all, and other times there's tsunamis that hit. And I think it's if we can look at the journey as being act, then it is with anyone else in my life, in the sense that there are no barriers. So that, you know, with my other children, I'm still their earthly father, and I still have this concept that sometimes I feel like I have to correct them, or I have to teach them, or I have to help them understand a lesson. None of that exists with Noah. There's nothing he needs from me. So our relationship is one where it's just a connection. And because of that, there are aspects of him that live on in me. And I became more because of his being in my life. And by allowing those mores to come out, in my case, you know, one of the things that I did is I was very focused. And as you mentioned in my kind of a brief bio, and the folks still in the corporate ladder, and I was a very focused individual and didn't take the time to really look much outside myself or concern myself with others. And that's not who Noah was. Noah was a kid when he was playing soccer at 4, more concerned with finding the dandelion that he gave his mom and where the ball was or where the other players were doing. Because to him, he just wanted to experience that beauty, and he would stop to see the beauty in everything. And it's now I find myself doing that a lot more in my life because he incorporated, he taught me that, but it really changed me at a core level. It's almost like I had something, it's, you know, you say, they say you can't, you know, once you learn to ride a bike, you'll always know. But, you know, if you have an amputation, you're going to have to learn to ride a bike again. I think that what happens is it's a deeper type of learning. I think the thing is the way your children have affected you, no matter what happens with you in your life, that is part of who you are and always will be, because it is you plus your relationship with them that exists in you and in that pure form that will always be there.
I think that's so precious. I think that's so important for us to realize, is that no matter how long or how little amount of time our child had here on the, if our child never breathed outside of the womb, our child changed us in some way, and that was our child always be with us.
Absolutely, because we were affected and changed that concept alive. So small, because you can only see the world in your own little bubble, and you can't see it beyond your own skin. And as time goes on, you start to see those people close to you and realize how what you're doing starts to affect and change them. And over time, I think you come to this point where what you really want to do is get back to others in that grief journey. Mm-hmm. And I want to be careful, because you and I have kind of done that on a monumental scale. And I don't want people to feel like they have to go do something like you've done or what I've done. Something, it can be simply as recognizing, maybe if you have a friend who has someone who's loved died, maybe you're the person who's willing to pick up the phone and call them and aren't afraid to have that conversation when that occurs in your life. You know, it could be whatever, because I think it's that giving back that starts to become what that grief journey too is that continually giving back, whatever that might mean. It can mm-hmm. mean a lot of different things. It might mean giving back, might mean, you know, keeping a job.
And the ways to give back, there are limitless. They're just limitless. And I know some parents, I've had them ask me, you know, what can I do? I can't think of anything. And it's like, don't worry about it. When it's the right time, something will present itself and you'll know this is what I need to do. And it, you know, to try to rack your brain and think, how can I, my child, what can I do? How can I give back? How can I help other people? It's like, maybe you're just not at that point yet. And I love the way you say to honor where we are in our grief journey, to honor and lean into it, be okay with wherever you are in that journey.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When you were talking about the, in our talking about the fact that a child lived is what mattered, I pulled my phone over to look up something. Have you heard the poem or the story about the dash? It's, it talks about, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's, I read of a man who did speak at a funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke of the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. Yeah. And it goes on to talk about that. And I think that that's so important for our child, is the fact that they lived and that we are a better person. It's to keep our child's memory alive. If we don't do it, who else is going to? But it's not something to feel guilty about or feel like compelled to do right now. It's just in your journey and let your journey take whatever form it needs to take and it is taking.
When the time comes, people will know what it is. And when that time comes, it will happen. And when it will happen, I don't know. And you can't say it's going to happen in a year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. It'll be this, that, or the other thing. It'll feel right and you'll do it, because it'll be whatever it is when it occurs.
Yeah. Are there anything that you can recommend? I know at the beginning we can't make those choices. We talked about, we get to the place where we can start to make choices. At the beginning, we're just sucked under the grief. I mean, it just takes us under and we are barely in survival. Or choose if we're going to come out of this in a way that honors our child and honors our own life, really. So is there anything you can think of, and maybe going into this walking through grief thing that you put together, are there things that you can recommend that people can do to kind of work towards those choices? Or what are some of these choices that we find ourselves getting to make?
Well, I think it's a matter of honoring the choices that we are making, because I would see it slightly different than what you proposed. Is I think we make choices from the very, very beginning. They don't seem like choices, but the choice to continue to breathe, the choice to get out of bed, the choice to sit there and cry, even though it doesn't feel like a choice, but allowing yourself to just let the rest of your things in your life go and be there and cry. Those are all choices that at the time, they don't feel choices because they feel like, well, what else could I possibly do? But in every case, there was another choice. You didn't have to do any of those things. There was other choices to be made, and you still made every one of those choices. And I think if we can honor that as they go, and as the choices start to become more obvious choices, as they start to become larger and bigger, it isn't that we can recognize that we've been growing on that journey. And it goes back to that saying, watching that grass grow. In the very beginning, the choices are so small. The moment they aren't small. In that moment, they are just as big as the biggest choice you ever made in your life. And it is allowing yourself to honor that. And I think one of the choices that we constantly can do is to continue to, as you said, trial and error of what is right for us. Because there isn't one way. Tom Niemeyer says there's as many ways to grieve as there are people who grieve. And I think exactly what I've done, or you were telling everyone exactly what you did, certain aspects of that would resonate with people and certain aspects would be right for them to take. But if we can take those trial and errors and honor that and allow ourselves to continue to make those choices and keep going back and realizing that, we didn't, you saying that you had four children was not a mistake. It was not doing wrong. It was you taking the courage to make a choice to answer the question and then honoring what the answer was and recognizing that a different choice was the choice you wanted to make.
And I had to make the wrong choice in order to know what the right choice was for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So was it really the wrong choice? Because you now know what the right choice is.
Right. So we don't have to beat ourselves up if we feel like, why am I 6 years into this and still a mess and I can still barely get out of bed? We don't up because of the choices. I know of one mom in particular who, that 10-year thing again, but she was a mess for 10 years. She was basically for 10 years. And once she pulled out of that, she just like beat herself up because it was like, look at all the time I lost in life. Look at,
No, it does not. Because all of our choices that we made in life brought us to where we are today. Mm-hmm. And, I've said that to other people. They say, well, I would have gotten here differently had I known that. And the answer is maybe you would have, but you didn't. This is how you got here. This is what you did. With all of that, I think the other thing that's very hard in grief is, I think oftentimes back to that comparing that happens is people look at others that they see grieving and they see the public face, they see the mask, they see what people want to perceive. Mm-hmm. And I think, even those closest to us, we have these barriers and these walls that we put up. And there's no way to know what someone else is really going through. There's no way to really understand that. But I think to know that we are all human and that this is natural. This grief is not this. It's not a disease. It is something that we've all got. And the cure for it is to live and allow yourself to love and to just continue on the journey, because there isn't a cure. It doesn't go away. It is part of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. The other thing, I think, as we wrap it up here, we've hit almost an hour, Glenn, is the fact that we are on a journey, but this journey here isn't permanent. There's more journey to come, and that's where our children are. And I think that's part of that perspective thing, is that we get so wrapped up in the here and now that it's easy to forget this isn't permanent. This isn't all there is. There's so much more, and the more is so much better, and our kids are already there.
Absolutely. Back to that quote that I started everything with, you know, what the journey at the end of life is not a lonely path into eternity, but rather a critical reunion with those lost. And I think that's exactly what you're pointing it out, because it's not a what if. At the end of the journey, there is a wonderful reunion.
Yes, yes. Well, thankful for that. Well, and it has been so good talking to you, even with all the technical stuff going on. So how can people, what's the best way for people you have to offer?
Well, Walking Through Grief is a nine-week grief support program designed for anybody who wants to run a grief support program, whether they in some sort of hospice or other healing environment. And that is available at walkingthroughgrief.com. You can also find me at thegrieftoolbox.com or the Grief Toolbox Facebook page. Any of those is a great way to get in touch with me.
And with that, I think we've had a pretty good wrap-up. We just did a full circle, didn't we?
Absolutely. So if wherever you are on your grief journey, be compassionate with yourself. Show yourself the love and support that you deserve, recognizing that this journey is one step at a time, and keep making those steps.
I just love Glenn and his heart of compassion. I know since the time we recorded this, he isn't as involved in the national level like he used to be, but he's very involved locally where he lives out east. I believe it's Massachusetts. Now, I did have Glenn on as a guest on the podcast way back when I first got started. If you would like to listen to those, they're episode 19, Finding Hope, and episode 20, Finding Your Direction Again. And I'll put links to those in the show notes. They were also really good. Let's go ahead with the birthday segment. These birthdays are from January 12th through the 25th. Noah J. Barella, budded on earth to bloom in heaven on January 14th. Ezra Jamin was born on January 15th and is forever 4 months old. Joshua Caldwell was born on January 16th and is forever 28. Adrian Augustine was born on January 17th and is forever 18. Jeanette Marie was born on January 19th and is forever 36. Tommy Wills was born on January 19th and is forever 23. As always, we celebrate the day these children came into the world. It will always be a special day. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced on the podcast, just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. Fill out the form there, including the pronunciation of your child's name, if their name sometimes is mispronounced, because I do want to say it correctly for you. Just submit that information, and the week or two of their birthday, I will announce it, and Dave will send you an email to remind you to listen. Death itself is an event, but grief is a journey that we take one step at a time, just like Glenn said. We're all on our own individual journey, but we're also walking together on this unwanted journey. And I believe after listening to Glenn, he was able to encourage you on your journey and to remind you to hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.